Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and I'm not going to try to avoid the marathon I did on Friday, so let me start quick. I sent a postcard today to Charlotte. I spent time with a 93-year-old and a 77-year-old this weekend. It is time to enjoy a 6-year-old. Are you willing? Love, Granddaddy. Reason I sent that to her is because Saturday I spent 3 hours with Miss Lillian and her son, Dwayne. It was over 3 hours. It was a long time. It was delightful. One of the things I did is I delivered to her a birthday card because her birthday is Tuesday. And she turns 94. I'm like, wow. And she still seems to be in good health. But, she's given some implications that. And then, of course, my concern is what about Dwayne? He's 56 and whatnot, never married. That was a really big part of my weekend. And, of course, I spent an hour with my friend Mike, who is 77, because he wanted to write a letter to a doctor. And he had me come there to write something so it was a little bit more polished because, but anyway, I did that. And right now he got a, wait a minute. Okay. We got it done, but God called me today. We're going to hold up anyway, but see, the thing is, it's the important thing is who does he turn to? He wanted something done like that, and the number of people he knows who could do that are very few. And so he asked me, and without question. Two things happened over the weekend, and I have two videos that I'll link to you. One is a gentleman, because I've discussed him before. I've given you some links, because I have several of his videos on Kozlanska.org. And I have several more now from him and others because Friday or Saturday, I forget what day it was, he was arrested by the Ukrainian police, FSB, I think is what it was called. They're security police and whatnot. And they're talking about potentially 8 years in prison. But see, the issue is what I did is then I read a whole bunch of the video of his arrest, some various commentators and so forth, I've got all linked together. So it's two things. One, it shows I'm trying to do the technology in order to so when you go to the one, it links to the others. So if you click on this, you will see right now, maybe there'll be more later. There is four videos. I have some articles, I haven't put them on. One is, and you know, I can't read that, but it is a video that the Ukrainians produced to say, look, this guy's a crook. If you listen to what he says, cause he's speaking in English, what they did is they snipped out little pieces and then put it in a framework to say, look, he's a bad person. Because if you understand, if you look at it in context, not at all. But there's a one video from RT, one from another gentleman who I've already had some of his videos online, Brian Berletic. He's a gentleman he's an American. He lives in Thailand. Because, you know, I've had some other of his videos on there. But anyway, so plus one of the articles referred to a BBC video from 2014 where the BBC at the time was saying, look, there are Nazis in Ukraine. But we can't say that anymore. But so here is something they say it, but of course now they whitewash it now. And they were very upfront. They talked about the various insignias and things of the nature. They interviewed some people and they talked about their allegiance to the Nazi or fascist ideology. But we can't say that anymore, can we? Which I find fascinating. So what I've done is I've got it there, and there's a whole lot more to do on that. But of course, fundamental to that is he's not unique. For somebody, because he's, you know, some of the articles I've read, he's a Putin propagandist kind of thing. And I'm sorry, no, he's not. But at the same time, because there's some comments about a video he did. Maybe I should put that on the site too. Some videos he did a year or two, well, it was a year ago, about some distorted stuff that was done. A series of videos that was done showing Ukraine, rah-rah kind of stuff. And it was basically the same area shot from different perspectives, but it was the same place. And they tried to show it as a whole bunch of different things. Anyway, and of course, that makes the Ukrainians look bad, and therefore he's bad. You know, it's, and so what you have to do is silence anybody who is pointing out your fallacies. So what I would suggest, the Gonzalo Lira example is identical to, not as strong, but identical to the Julian Assange example that I discussed. Anyway, there's a whole much more to go on with that. But the other thing is, I also watched, you know, while I had my breakfast, it was a good breakfast, kale with sautéed ground beef, some garlic, and it's very good. Meet King Charles, the Great Resetter. This is from James Corbett. And of course, I've got the copy, so you can easily download it. You know, again, part of the reason I use the technology I have is you go to a lot of sites, you know, YouTube, which if you get a third-party program, you can download it, as I do. You know, BitChute is kind of harder to do. Odyssey it's not that easy unless you have like a third-party program. With some places, like, for example, Kozlowski.org, you say, oh, great, I can watch it online or I can download it. Just simply click the download button and it's... So you don't need any third-party tool to do that, because the objective is to communicate, not to capture you. Anyway, I have that on there, and I thought it was interesting because, you know, there was all the fanfare. Was it Saturday? I don't know. but he did the video and apparently released it, Saturday or Sunday, because they dropped in a few clips from this coronation, which, no, I did not see. What I did see is the clips from in there. Because most of it was obviously done beforehand, because it talked about his character. And specifically, you know, the reason they call it the Great Resetter is because he's one of the spearheads of the Great Reset, you know, which is promoted by the World Economic Forum. And if I recall correctly, they even drop in a lot of the video, you know, because I should put that on too. There is the infamous video that the World Economic Forum put out about the Great Reset, and you know, it's 2030. I own nothing. I've never been happier. You know, that line was one of the first points of their delightful package in order to bless the world. You own nothing. Submit is basically the purpose. You know, again, because it's when you turn the economic system over to the CBDC, central bank digital currencies. So as the head of the Bank for International Settlements stated that the reason we want to do this is so we have control of every single transaction that is done anywhere in the world. And then we have the ability to say that you cannot do that. And obviously people will point to the revelation, you cannot buy or sell without the mark of the beast. To what degree, that's a separate question, but that's a whole huge issue. But again, who will address that? You know, it's like when I dealt with moneyisdebt.net, Paul Grignon, in reference to producer-issued credit a couple years ago. And, you know, who picks it up? Because most people ever say, oh, money, how can I take money and use it to manipulate money in order to make more money? Not produce a good product. No, I just want to manipulate money so I get more money. That's the seed of the destruction. So, and of course, which gets to the issue that it's not them, it's us. It's the people who say, well, I want my fair share. Anyway. So I sent out an email last night to a bunch of people, a small number of people, indicating current status on Shofar Nexus, and I got some responses. And some were interesting. And there's some dialogue on this, not only about the project, but about theology. But I won't, because it's percolating, you know, and the issue is, it seems that it's easy to engage somebody. How can I make money? And how can I make money in obedience to Christ? Oh, no. Let's not go to there. We do not try to put those things together, which I find most unfortunate. I find that very unfortunate. But that obviously, because I may have touched it on it a while back, but I did I did because I connected something a while back, and I think I only talked with my friend Chris on this. I don't think I've mentioned it, so I want to mention it to make sure if it's a repeat. I didn't see it. So 1 Timothy 5, you may be familiar with this. Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father, a younger man as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, all in purity. So, you know, this is kind of the setup. Basically have a gracious tone. But then we get into the primary subject matter where there's been an issue. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let us first learn to show godliness to their own household to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. So a widow has children or grandchildren, they need to be supported by their children and grand. That widow needs to be supported by. Okay. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers all prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. So a woman who's trusting the Lord is basically someone who is blessed in context, and the woman who's not, the self-indulgent, is basically dead in the sense, spiritual death, basically. Command these things well, so that they may be without reproach. And of course, the verse of controversy. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and worse than the unbeliever. This is what has been used, obviously, against me by, well, specifically, Chris Bitterman. And as I pointed out before, it's a twist. But just to continue the context, let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, having the reputation of good works, if she's brought up children, shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints and cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going from house to house, and not only idlers, but gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, and manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. For some have already strayed after Satan. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that they may care for those who are truly widows. So let's look at that last verse. Let the church, let the assembly, Not be burdened, so they may care for those truly widows. In other words, the assembly, the community of believers, local community believers should have a very light duty burden of only those who are truly widows. But the beginning of that, if a believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. I think the thing is important to see, if a believing woman, not person, woman. Why? I would suggest women need to take care of women. A man taking care of a widow is not a good idea. I think that should be obvious. You know, it's very important to me when I visit Miss Lillian, a widow, a 93-year-old widow, give it a few minutes, a 94-year-old widow. I mean, tomorrow she becomes 94. It's the James 1:27 to visit orphans and widows. That's why I do it. And I'm very, very conscious. Every time I've met her, it's always been in her front yard, outside. I do not go into her house because it's very very specific. I am there as an act of love. And even though, you know, she's literally old enough to be my mom. I make sure that the context remains unquestionable. But going back to the verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially members of his own household, he has denied the faith, which is worse than an unbeliever. I've been through that before because I pointed out, does not provide is pronoio, to consider beforehand. In other words, when you take that passage out of context and say, you're a man and you have family, you need to provide for them today. That's not what it's talking about. That is, if you want to make that argument, this is not the place to make the argument from, because the context is widows, and you're preparing beforehand for your wife and your mother, because those are the ones in the context here. And, you know, so I've been through that several times. Because again, dare I say, the Bible is sexist. Men and women are not identical. And of course, you know, one of the issues, just like the example of Gonzalo Lira, there are cases already. We're pointing that out, that men and women are different. We have different roles. We'll get you arrested. And that rate will increase undoubtedly. And it will not necessarily be arrested, but you will have a price to pay in some way. But there is a fascinating thing that I wanted to connect, because again, one of the things I kind of point out is the Bible is consistent. You see this passage and you say, okay, well, this passage is kind of by itself and it, you know, talking about widows, and it's kind of separate from the rest of the Bible. Not at all. And even more, the 1 Timothy 5:8, we have a superb example of how to live that out by our Creator. John 19, Jesus is on the cross. He is not in a really comfortable position. He is in significant pain. But what is his focus? While he's there with the agony of the cross, after being scourged and beaten, having to carry the cross and so forth, being nailed to the cross, he's in pain. And what is his focus? Verse 26, when Jesus saw his mother and disciple and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own home. There's a clear indication here that Joseph was dead. You know, Mary's husband. So she was truly a widow. Jesus is the, we might say, the biological son of Mary. If anyone does not provide for his relatives to think beforehand, to prepare beforehand, and especially for members of his household, like his mother, he is denied the faith and worse than an unbeliever. I'm going to suggest that Jesus is not an unbeliever. No, not at all. You want an example of someone who knows and trusts in his Father? That would be Jesus. When he says, woman, behold your son, he is preparing beforehand, before his demise, for the care of his mother. And it's kind of echoed in the sense, you know, making sure that the disciple, the assumption obviously is you know, because the disciple whom he loved, typically we say this is the Apostle John. John, what a good name. Anyway, but he says to the disciple, behold your mother. So he's telling his mother, your care is now coming from the disciple. And he's telling the disciple, take care of my mom. Now, the thing that I think is important is the disciple into his own home. My suggestion is, and I'd have to verify this, because Paul clearly was alone. I don't know if there was evidence that he ever had a wife or not. But clearly he did not during the time he was writing the New Testament from the Damascus Road and to the end. Others of the apostles clearly did have wives, because he talks about, do we not have a right to take a believing spouse with us? So my assumption is, I think it would be reasonably clear to assume this, that this particular disciple, assuming again it's John, the Apostle John, had a wife. Because if you go back to that 1 Timothy 5:16, if a believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Mary is not necessarily the relative, but she's effectively been assigned by Christ to that home. And you know, I think there was no issue on that part. Yes, we will do this because we understand who these people are. So the bottom line is, what I suggest, Jesus is there in significant agony, and he's living out far more than anyone ever has, or ever will, I would suggest, 1 Timothy 5:8. He's preparing beforehand for his mother. Because he doesn't have a wife. Well, you know, there's the bride of Christ, but that's a different context. He doesn't have a wife, and 1 Timothy 5 is for the wife and the mother. He's living it. Again, what I suggest is the consistency of Scripture is fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic. And to see the love of Christ in the sense he's in pain. He's probably physically weakened. And where is his heart? The woman who bore him. He's saying, I love you. And my love for you is going to continue. Obviously, in a different way because of the resurrection and so forth, but in a very real way, in the physical needs of her in that life. He showed love. That's what 1 Timothy 5 is all about, showing love. And of course, again, there's context here about this is sexist. A man is to prepare beforehand, which, as I pointed out before when I went through 1 Timothy 5, how do we know how to do this? Deuteronomy 6, a dad is called to train his children to be obedient to the Lord, to Christ. And one of the ways to do that is take care of their mom? And what am I doing? What have I been doing now for years with my, what was recently written, the voicemails, and of course now the videos? I'm trying to train my children. Take care of your mom. Obviously, I should be doing that with her here. But she abandoned me. I can't right now. But I want to teach my kids, because one day I may be gone, and it may be before my wife. There's possibility of this. Take care of your mom. My lady, my wife. I'm trying to live. 1 Timothy 5:8. As I would contend, the Lord describes, not the way Chris Bitterman describes, or your dad. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore. I do love you, and I want you back.